Welcome to our AJAG PD Pod, the place for discussion, debate, and learning about all things accounting. Our hosts, Ivan Tabak, Jonathan Tucker, are CPAs that have been in practice for more than 3 decades. Together, they bring varying experience and viewpoints to the table, not to mention a little humor, too. Join us as we talk through current issues and hot topics, tap into expert guest insights, and enjoy the odd walk down AJAG memory lane. Before we begin today's podcast, please note, although the educational material within the podcast has been carefully prepared, none of the persons involved in the preparation of the material accepts any legal responsibility for its contents or for any consequences arising from its use. As well, the podcast material and the references contained therein may reflect laws and practices that are subject to change. Advice regarding a particular fact or situation should always be reviewed by a qualified professional. This podcast is produced and distributed by AJAG Professional Development. For more information about AJAG or any of its offerings, please visit ajag.ca.
So this is episode 13 of AJAG PD Pod, and I'm Ivan Tabak.
I'm Jonathan Tucker.
And today we're going to talk about a number of issues that have come up, just recent things in the news, recent developments from CRA,
some odds and ends, ethics issues,
ethics,
E&I.
Yeah, all kinds of fun stuff with our profession.
Continues. Yeah. It just continues.
Yeah,
it
gets better and better.
So where do you want to start?
Well, I guess the fun one, the story about E&Y with employees taking two or more professional development courses at the same time.
We have some ethics courses we could suggest they take.
Yeah. Okay. We could. That could be a good little bump for us.
So what do you think of that, them taking two courses at once?
I think they're lucky they're taking any. So, you know, like, it might be an accomplishment for that. But, you know, I guess you can't, you know, people are going to try and scam the system somehow.
Yeah.
No matter what you're doing.
Yeah. I think we have a few stories from over the years of how people.
Oh, yeah. At our old live courses where signing the sheet for people that aren't there.
Yeah. Or turning up, signing in, taking the book and leaving.
Yeah.
That was the.
Yeah. So it doesn't.
Yeah.
E&Y is not unique.
The more things change, the more they stay the same.
Yeah. We're just lucky that those weren't our staff.
Yeah.
But so they've fired a bunch of staff members.
This is in the
once
U.S.
That was caught.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that wouldn't happen in.
It wouldn't happen in Canada.
No.
No. No.
Nice to hear.
Well, I'll direct people to the ethics courses we have on our website. Navigating Ethical Dilemmas in the Workplace is one, and then The Cost of Misconduct, that's an ethics course, and also fraud prevention. So so those are some, if you're looking for ethics courses to complete by the end of the year, there's some there.
Fraud prevent. Have you ever found a fraud?
Have I ever found it? You found a fraud, didn't you?
I found a fraud once back in my auditing days.
Yeah. What was that about?
Trail.
And how did you find it?
The client bookkeeper ran monthly P&Ls. And then she added up the 12 annual P&Ls, and the numbers didn't agree to the annual report that came out of the system.
Hmm.
And they couldn't figure it out.
So was she going back and changing things?
She wasn't.
Ah.
They had people from the firm, my old firm, coming in, and they had partners go in and senior guys trying to figure out what is going on. Nobody could figure it out. Anyway, they sent me in one day. The client was still complaining. And I started just going through the system and asking, okay, how does it enter?
Yeah,
Material. There was a company that just bought and sold material. There was no processing or anything. So a straight inventory issue.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, questioning each clerk or each person, show me, you get an order, how was it entered? What if you have to change it? And then who can override the system? And anyway, it came out to one of the general manager of the company who was treated like a son to the owner, was selling stuff at the back door and going in and just overriding quantities in the inventory.
Wow. So you wouldn't even know.
So nobody really noticed on that. But when you add up, you run a monthly and then the inventory is just changed, right? When
Without,
you add up the 12 months, it's not going to equal your year end because numbers have changed. Anyway, so we figured out what was happening, and they called private investigator, and they followed this guy, and then they caught him in the boardroom. He had hidden a bag of cash in the company's boardroom, and they caught him pulling it out. So, so that was
that was a good day for
great. You? Oh yeah, okay. Senior partner knew my name for about a week. That was it.
I remember
that was fun.
I remember my wife was the subject of a fraud investigation. We used to work in the same company. That's where we met, and there was a new employee that came along, and I had made a comment to my wife and said, you know, something just doesn't sit right with me. So anyway, I guess it was maybe a year later. And she called me one day and she said, you're not going to believe what's happened. And I said, so what happened? So she said, you remember that person you had that suspicion about? They've been taking money from the company and they think it's anywhere from $250,000 to $400,000. And they couldn't figure out, it was in their retail operation where my wife worked. And this person was very good at looking over the shoulder of her colleagues to see when they put in their code for the cash registers. And so she got my wife's code, and what she was basically doing was very simple. It was just processing returns, saying books had come back and they hadn't. But she had everyone's codes. So they put in a little fisheye or like fish a camera on a very small, hard to see, like a fishing line, and then they could match the time and the person, and that's how they caught them. And according to my wife, the RCMP got involved in it, and it was this person was part of a terrorist organization. Wow. And the RCMP said, do not press charges, you do not want to mess with these people. And that's when the RCMP said that. And you know, that person's next shop was at a bank.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was, so anyway, that was
interesting.
That was the, but it's so common, eh? Fraud is such a common area. I had a client a couple of years ago and he called me and he was an orthodontist and he said, I can't believe what I just discovered. And, it was, somebody who had fit the profile of somebody who needs money, single parent, medical expenses, orthodontics, and things like that. You would think he would have given her a good deal for orthodontics since he was an orthodontist, but at any rate, this person used to order supplies, and so he called his supplier and said, like, is there nothing you can do on price? And the supplier, the rep said, what do you mean? Like, I'm giving you cash credit cards as a way to reduce it. And he said, what are you talking about? And if the cash cards were going to the mother, or it's to his employee, who was a single mother. And he said, like, I have taken care of, she's been like my longest standing employee. I can't, the sense of betrayal he had from this was just, anyway, he let her go. But he was heartbroken about it because he just couldn't believe somebody would take advantage of him when he tried to help her out. So anyway. Yep. It happens everywhere, I guess, eh? And there's been some shenanigans going on refunds being issued by CRA. Did you see this? This was a bogus, the person logged into their CRA account and went back and made some changes and triggered a $40 million refund that CRA then paid out.
Without checking it. Nice.
Compare that to the foreign tax credits that we're running into on clients' tax returns for a couple of hundred dollars.
Yeah, right? The process and review letters that to catch that $200 tax cheat.
So the bank called CRA and said, "Do you really think we should be processing this refund?" So, and
the bank caught it.
The bank caught it for $40 million. So,
yeah, amazing. There, the stuff that that I've been seeing, the things that they're checking.
Oh,
the CRA.
Very small things.
It's ridiculous.
Very small.
Ridiculous.
In comparison. But we've got some cybersecurity courses for people that are thinking, well, maybe I've got some exposure. So, and also insurance. This is the other thing about CPA firms.
Cyber insurance.
Having cyber insurance. Yeah.
It's if the exposure is incredible.
Yeah.
You just log on to the internet and you know.
Yeah.
Think of the information on your computer.
Yeah.
Current clients, former clients.
Yeah.
And you get a breach and you have to advise every single person or company that has a file on your computer.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy.
So you absolutely need insurance and you need to take precautions.
Yeah. And we've had a podcast on this before, but also courses on cybersecurity.
Yeah.
Check out our scheduled courses on cybersecurity, just to stay on top of this stuff. And if you're looking for if you're looking for insurers, the two I've come across in my practice, Marsh apparently offers this, and another company called Zensurance, which I think is a broker, but you can also get cybersecurity coverage through that as well. So if you're looking for that, those are a couple of sources to consider, but no one's safe from this, right? No one's immune from this. No. So, including H&R Block, which apparently got hacked for how many people? I just read the story quickly, but
I don't know how many. It was 40,000 maybe or something like that.
Yeah.
So information was hacked and then
CRA
changed and they went in. Well, that's what it was. They hacked into their system. They got
and clients'
credentials.
And redirected.
Changed the direct deposit information.
Mm-hmm.
And
that simple.
And stole significant amount of money that way.
Yeah.
So at least you can't blame CRA on that one.
Yeah. No, they just followed the taxpayer's instructions, or so they thought.
Yeah. Quality assurance manual.
Oh, yeah.
It's been needed. It's been required for assurance engagements, but now it's for compilation practices as well.
Yeah,
and it's very cumbersome.
And it just
the detail that they're looking for.
Yeah. It's a far cry from what we used to think of under the old notice to readers, right? Which is is there a bank statement? Was pretty much the criteria.
Then it goes from that to look to documenting the client system.
Yeah.
And now you've got to document your own system.
Yeah. And have it monitored.
Yeah. So, you
know, so some courses on that. We have a few courses up. Marcus Gunther did a podcast for us on that as well.
Yeah.
If people want to.
And it'll be part of the update courses.
Yeah. Yeah.
That we have coming. But it's unbelievable the what's happened to a simple practice.
Yeah.
You know, you give up assurance because you want to keep it simple.
Yeah.
And then now.
Well, I suppose the rationale is that people are giving compilation or compiled financial information that is now being relied upon. It used to be that these were just put together for filing a tax return, right? And now it's taken on a new life. So I suppose, and also internationally as well. That's the other thing I was reading recently, that this push now with non-complex entities like these small clients is all part of an international, as we try to harmonize our standards with what's going on international as well. So it's just the evolution of our profession. Doesn't make it easier, but those are the forces at work.
Yeah.
So,
but you know, for a lot of small practitioners.
Yeah.
And small firms.
Yeah.
No. It's going to be another case of a bunch of forms you got to fill out.
Yeah. And it impacts fees at the end of the day because you still have to do the work. Right.
And how a client's going to pay for it.
Yeah.
you know, you're going to get pushback. So unless everybody across the board starts raising their fees, you know, you're going to get the whole new round of
and I think fee
competition.
Fees are going up generally because there is a shortage of in the profession. Like some of the fees I'm seeing in on not-for-profits that I'm involved with sitting on boards, the audit fees. So I think there is an impact generally across the board because if we have to do this extra work and also have it monitored and so on, of course our fees are going to go up, right? And I mean, it's just the reality of it.
Yeah.
But it's not a pleasant conversation to have with a client because they just think we're padding our bill. So, but some courses on this development on quality assurance, you can find on our course calendar a couple of them that come to mind. David Baker's quality management course and Marcus Gunther, there's a couple of courses there. David's is new responsibilities for firms, and then Marcus's quality management, getting ready to apply the new standards. And also, I'd refer you to Marcus's course, Customizing Your Quality Assurance Manual and Designing Monitoring Activities 2024. So that's the latest there on the new quality assurance manual and the struggles people are having to have that in place.
Yeah. I wonder how quickly the institute's going to start reviewing those. Mm. I guess it'll be part of the next
round. Yeah, the next round of practice inspection.
Yeah.
And then we're into November now, and still no updates on software for the capital gains inclusion rate.
Right. Yeah, I've done a couple of capital dividends where we've had to use the new rates, but they haven't been formally the budget or that part of it hasn't been.
Have you done any year ends yet with capital gains?
Not yet.
Yeah,
it hasn't. I haven't hit that part yet, but. I guess you'll have to override the calculation.
Yeah.
In the software if it's not updated yet.
Yeah. I heard another practitioner the other day saying they're using this, what's in the software, and doing the calculation and then telling the client, here's how much it's actually going to be, pay that extra amount and then go back and amend the T2.
Right.
I still find it hard to believe that we're this far in and the software hasn't been updated. But anyway, that's a couple of different approaches, right? Either do the calculation override as you're saying, or
but just paying in extra when you file it, you're just going to get that extra as refunded.
Yeah. Well, unless then you go back and amend it to report the corrected amount.
But first, they're going to assess it.
Yeah.
And then they're going to apply your payment.
Yeah.
And then they're going to send you a refund.
Yeah. No. Fair enough. Yeah.
Unless you just.
Use code to put, and
don't put the refund and then go back and apply it to avoid the interest.
Isn't just the extra work, from these little things. And you know clients are going to come to us and get us to do it. And it's just,
sure.
It's a little aggravating.
And that's going to be fun. This is for tax season.
Yeah.
Trying to, again, get the split and get proper reports. And are the brokerage firm going to give you a proper report split between the two things, or are they going to give you the standard report and now you've got
it's up to you to do the calculation,
figure it out, you know,
well,
your line and add up the columns, and
it'll be every bank will be different, right? Every investment house will be
remember
different.
When the foreign reporting came in and the first couple of years, the trying to get the information before they standardize the reports, I mean, had to take 12 months of broker statements,
load them into a spreadsheet,
add up,
This
is this foreign, is this foreign? Because sometimes they're mixed in the categories.
Crazy exchange rate.
Yeah. So it's, I remember when they changed, the last time they changed the rates.
Yeah.
What was it?
What year?
Oh, geez.
I think it was 2008. It was,
maybe. It was 15 or so years ago, at least.
Yeah.
And I remember the jumping through, through hoops trying to get that
and to
information or just
and filling out the returns.
Having to keep it all split. And
I was thinking the other day, do you remember, now I'm really dating myself, but 94, when they got rid of the capital gains, the general capital gains exception.
Oh, yeah, trying to make the election.
Yeah, on everything.
You know. Yeah. And then... Tracking, to keep track of
them. Yeah.
Occasionally, one still crops up where there's a cost base that was bumped. But I'm sure CRA made out like bandits in that, because people just lost track of the bump.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, it's not hard to do. Other topics. Oh, there was an article on Airbnb and a court case. There was a recent court case.
Right, where they're deeming properties to be conducting a business for short-term rentals instead of long-term rentals.
Yeah.
Even when they only did it for a small part of the year for the Airbnb type
rental. But then is there an impact when you come to sell that property? That was the, I think, the issue.
Well, if it was, if they turn around and they charge them HST on the value of the property because they said it's now subject to that as opposed to long-term rental where it's exempt.
Yep,
so they converted, but it was a case where they only did it for a few weeks, I think, of the year.
Yeah, there was a case that this was a numbered company, 135123, Ontario, and versus Her Majesty the King, His Majesty the King, sorry about that. There was an appeal relating to the sale of a condo that had been used for 9 years as a long-term rental, and that for 14 months it was used for short-term leases through Airbnb. And the question before the court was whether or not in that situation the sale of the condominium was subject to GST. And it turned out it was.
So it's something to watch out for.
Absolutely.
And if it is, I've seen where, people go from long-term to short-term to long-term. And
they don't realize the consequences.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, neither did we.
Yeah. 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 But have you run across that a lot?
No. Not yet.
Yeah.
But, and I've had one where they were short term, and then this was they have a rental property in BC, but this had to do with the other rules, the deductibility of expenses and whatnot.
The new rules? Are you talking? Current rules
now came in last year, I think.
In the budget, yeah.
Yeah.
So if it fell outside of a certain area, or if you didn't meet the municipal, then they deny certain
expenses. So anyway, so the client just stopped doing the short term
and went
full long term. So they avoided the whole the whole thing. And certainly they cut their revenue significantly by doing that, but they didn't.
But the clients that I've seen with Airbnb have also seen revenues going down a fair amount the last couple of years. The height was like 2021. Everybody was coming out of the pandemic. Everybody just wanted to get out and go somewhere. And that's when these properties made a lot of money. But now as I see clients who have these properties, their revenues are maybe half of what they were making a couple of years ago. Okay. So, and some are just selling, saying it's not worth it. So these trends,
Yeah.
Looks like a good thing, and then
condos, at least in Toronto, the condo market, right? Yeah. You couldn't lose, for how many years did that go on? And now people with new construction that's finally coming online are either underwater or break even, and, with interest rates, they're coming down, but they're still quite a bit higher than they were. So cash flow-wise, they might be underwater. So
the other thing, this is a bit of an aside, but money laundering in Airbnb. You run across that? Yeah, I have. And did some reading on it, and there is a lot of money coming out of China. They're trying to get the money out, and they're using platforms like Airbnb to clean the money.
You mean buying properties to rent or just paying for rentals?
Paying for rentals that don't exist. Anyway, it's something just to be aware of, because oftentimes we do these T1s and we don't we don't even think about those things, right?
Right?
But think about those. Sometimes people are using us to put through things that we may not even be aware of.
Hadn't heard that.
Yeah, yeah. So, all right. Well, as we finish up today's podcast, some courses that people might be interested in the next 3 weeks. Some of our
why don't you tell us about them?
Would you like me to do that? All right. Why don't I do that? So we have an assurance update that's being released in the next couple of weeks. There's an ASPE update on financial instruments. I'm going to have to look down at my list because I can't remember any other ones. There's an income tax update. That's easy to forget, that one. The income tax update. And a GST, HST update refresher course. So those are some of the things that are coming out in the next 3 weeks.
So be sure to set up your two screens and you can watch them at the same time.
I wouldn't encourage people to do that based on what happened in the United States.
Yes.
So, all right. Anything else?
Don't forget to sign up for our newsletter. If you go to ajag.ca, you can put in your information and you'll be kept up to date for the latest and greatest news coming out of AJAG and blogs that we put out periodically and updates on podcasts.
Very good. I think that's it for today. Thanks everyone for joining us. We look forward to seeing you inside of our next podcast. Have a great day.
Inside of her
head. I don't know what to say. I never know. That's what people say. So
okay.
It's kind of like, instead of saying clapping, put your hands together. It's like stuff like that.